It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Minute and a half past the hour, and we begin a brand new broadcast evening here on the Horn. It is the 16th day of August 2017. Yes, indeed. This program is live. It is, really happening. I'm not still on vacation. Believe you me, I'm really, really, really not still on vacation. But I'm happy to be here. Because, as crazy as it may seem, you get kind of used to doing this, and, I miss it when I'm not here. So I'm here, and I'm happy about it, and didn't have to miss yesterday, and that's awesome, too. We've reached midweek at the Horn. Downhill to Friday. Hump day. Day before Thursday. But also, of course, unlike anywhere else in broadcast land, prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Yes, brethren and sistren, the congregation there at the Cathedral of Common Sense didn't like it worth a damn either that I was gone for a week or so. And the little old blue-haired ladies were on me like a duck on a June bug. And I got to do the cooking again for fellowship dinner in the fellowship hall. I gotta be a little more quiet about letting people know I have a Kaneka stash. No, not a mustache, but a stash of Kaneka. Cause damned if it won't last long this way. Yeah. But that's what the little old blue-haired ladies wanted. So we hotted up the grill and put a whole bunch of Kaneka on, bunch of onions, bunch of green peppers, some little strips of jalapeno sauteed and steamed in alongside them. Got out the good French bread rolls, cut them into chunks. Yeah, it made for a mighty, mighty tasty sandwich. The little old blue-haired ladies did deign to create a great big green garden salad with some fresh tomatoes cut up in it and some fresh cucumbers, and it was mighty tasty. Just a little oil and sugar and vinegar thrown together and thrown over the good salad. It's a real good salad. So you might say it was a light late summer prayer meeting. Wednesday Fellowship Hall dinner, but there wasn't anything light, at all about the Mississippi mud cake. And I mean, there was only so much Kaneka to go around, so the deacons seemed to fill themselves up on the Mississippi mud cake afterwards. Not even so much as a scrap of a melted marshmallow. It was left there, and the little ones left it. No, they're just going to have to grow up and be deacons. But the deacons... the deacons trundled their massive bulk up those couple of flights of stairs from the fellowship hall in the basement, and went outside because it's a little muggy here in Appalachia. I mean, it's not Gulf Coast muggy. That's a different kind of muggy. But it's a little muggy here. But they managed to stand outside and smoke chain smoke with the sinners there for a little bit till Sister Carol Baker showed up with the cattle prod. And you know, when there is some water in the air, it tends to crackle particularly menacingly. And they heard that, and they hit it. The feet don't feel me now, and they blew right past Sister Carol Baker and the solar powered horn cattle prod, right through the vestibule. Past that desiccated bowl of buttermints, down the center aisle, and they gathered here like they do every Wednesday. And they got their big, heavy brass, burgundy velvet-lined offering plates, and they're preparing to move amongst us. Because we've got fundraising to do this evening, but thanks very kindly to Joe and Paula. Well, we've only got $175 to raise this evening. Oh, wait. Nope, $155. Subscribers, thank you. We only got $155 to raise this evening. And that's what we'll be doing. That's what we'll be seeking as the plates pass. A little PayPal button in the bottom. Reminder: we have a subscription campaign going on here at the end of the month. I'll do it once a month. Here at the end of the month, I'll send out bumper stickers. But we've got a subscription campaign going on over at Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID. If you'd like to just set it and forget it, put in $10, $20, whatever you want to put in. We're trying to find the equivalent of 400 people at $10 a month. And we're down around the 338 range now. 338 folks. And Mr. Soros, you can just wipe it all out all at once. Just put $10,000 a month, and away we go. So that's how it'll go. I'm sorry, I seem a little scattered here because once again I'm getting emails from people who can't get the program, and I'm sorry about that, but we're sending merrily along from here, but apparently TuneIn isn't getting it. Is it? I don't know. I'm waiting to find out. It's really frustrating having to do this, but... God damn it. Okay, Steve from Georgia Stan tells me White Rose is down. Let me work on that, because it was up a little bit ago. Just have to wait and see. Kind of hard having a live audience. All right, let me get a tweet out while I'm at it. I apologize for the this will only take another minute or so. Be so cool to have an engineering staff. Okay, that'll work. All right. There we go then. Everybody's notified. Ben tells me he's driving and can't do anything about it at the moment. Well, but we'll see. We'll see. You know, I should probably, it's almost like I should restart the program, isn't it? Getting really frustrated about this stuff. Really, really frustrated. Oh, well. Someday we'll solve all these problems. Just not tonight. But that having been said, there is a program yet to do, and there's $155 to raise. And it's true, Steve from Georgia Stan, moderating in the chat room tonight, reminded me of last night. So let's call that $125 to raise to finish the evening. That should be considerably easier, shouldn't it? Let's try. We'll get the deacons moving about. I'll call up the minister of music, and if you, sir, would kindly lead us in the offertory hymn, brother minister of music, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, to prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. How glory! We have had some setbacks for today. Amen. But, brethren and sister, we will rise above them. How? Right, right. Oh, brethren and sister, even though the evil one has attempted to still the voices reaching out into the interweb tubes, brethren and sister, we are still here. The Lord God Almighty will never give us more than we can bar. Amen. Glory. Brethren and sistren, the offering plate having just returned, offering plates, heavy brass and velvet lined, having returned empty. Brother Deacon Asa has said there's a $40 challenge. If anybody will match it. So there it stands. Brethren and sisters, if we meet that, we won't have but 40 more dollars to go. So that's, I'll be damned. It's a prayer meeting Wednesday miracle, brethren and sistren. All the way from Australia comes the message from Robert. There you are, loud and clear. Oh. And by the way, I want to reach out to a member of the congregation in the chat room right now, Kid Mark. Kid Mark from... who is over in Europe, listening in the middle of bedtime. So welcome aboard. Thank you very kindly. So, brethren and sisters, it's hard to. It would otherwise be hard to do prayer meeting Wednesday in the middle of a Nazi putsch in the new United States. But, well, fact of the matter is, the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Nazi Christians, like we needed to add another term onto that list, it takes half the program to say it in the first place. Have made it easy. Yes. Yes, they have. Because, you see, when you get right down to it, there's an intersection between Nazism and right-wing Christianity. Hell, it's not even so much an intersection as it is just a merging. You know, it's just one lane merging into another and cruising along on a highway of blood. I had a note from Sister Carol Baker a minute ago. Said, "You'll have to forgive me if I'm not feeling too Jesus-y tonight. Nazis do that to me." Yeah, they do that to me too. But as I mentioned to Sister Carol, they will, we can always count on white-wing Christianity to create the necessary space in which we can keep talking about the American Nazi putsch. And again, I think that's maybe how we talk about this now. This is the Nazi putsch of 2017. Granted, it's not a beer hall putsch. It's more like a tiki torch putsch. But they're on the march, and they're deadly in earnest, and they're not going away. Poor chinless Mitch McConnell was forced to issue a weak and tepid statement today, condemning Nazism, but not a lot, because remember, they vote for him. So, yeah, look. Every Republican in Congress has a problem with this. Because as we have demonstrated, for instance, with the audio from Ronald Reagan in Neshoba County in August 1980, last night, there's been an underpinning of Nazism, white-wing extremism, fascism in the Republican Party for the better part of the time that, you know, I've been around. And most, the better part of the time that most of us have been around. You can't get elected as a Republican without right-wing, proto-fascist, neo-Nazi support. Oh, sure, they may not march. They might not even have Grandpappy's Exalted Cyclops hood and bed sheet anymore. But they are still who they are. And this is particularly true in the case of the religion industry. The ultra-right-wing, white-wing, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual religion industry. We haven't heard from proud son of Stanford, helmet-haired radio host for the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mazzuppistan. Shit, I passed through Tupelo the other day. You want to know why that place is so fucked up? I'll tell you why. Most of you don't know, I dare say. Before it was ever Tupelo, T-U-P-E-L-O, pronounced Tupelo, it's just below one plo and above three plo. No, Tupelo. Home of Elvis Aaron Presley. birthplace of, I should say, not home of. Home of's in Memphis, you know, Graceland. But long before it was Tupelo, well, and you know, the way this is working out, I guess my travel log is going to be in fits and starts. We'll just sort of work it into things like this. The American Family Association is headquartered in Tupelo. Lots of nasty things have happened in Tupelo. But the nastiest thing that ever happened in Tupelo happened a good long while back. And I would suggest that it's the sort of thing that will screw up a place forevermore. I'm talking about, and you probably don't know this, but the area where Tupelo is was first settled in terms of white folks. There'd been other people there for several millennia. Not too awfully far from where Tupelo now is, there existed, well, I mean, the whole area, let's see, further south was Choctaw, further north was Chickasaw, and in amongst them were a people called the Chawacha people. And there was a place called Akia. Mm-hmm. The French, this was not English. The French had colonized northern Mississippi and southern Mississippi as well. And he met the people who became called the Natchez people. Natchez, Mississippi, Natchez, Trace. That was in the late 1600s when white folks first encountered the Natchez people. And by 1700, they were down to about only 3,500 or so people because of the diseases that the filthy white colonists carried. And eventually, the Natchez people got fed up. And rose up. And were summarily slaughtered almost to the last person by the French. They were then taken in by the Chickasaw, the remnant. And it was a genocide. So that informs the whole thing. But that's just a little aside. We drove through there, and I told Agnes about it. Every bit of the Southeast is dark and bloody ground. So now, with a big banner that says Christian Inspiration and Information Radio behind him, proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher, he of the helmet-like hair, pontificates daily and engages in providing cover to the fools who listen to him for the Nazis. And there's a double bonus here because we're going to work some Islamophobia in here too. Yay! It's been a while since I issued a hockey puck warning. so, it, well, get the hockey puck and the duct tape. Because you'll bark when you hear this craziness. This good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christian craziness. Take it away, Brian.
Wants to cast this as a left versus right. On the left, you've got these anti-fascists, these anti-fa protesters. You have the BLM, the Black Lives Matter people. They are on the left. They are the good guys. They're here to stand up against bigotry and so forth. And then you have on the right, you have the white nationalists, and they are the bad guys. They're on the right. They're the far right. They're conservatives. That's absolutely a false premise. Ladies and gentlemen, what you had in Charlottesville was not a showdown between the left and the right, but between the left and the left.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead and scream a little bit. I can tell you by personal experience, it'll help. Because I did. No, I barked when I heard that. Yeah, people marching through the streets of Charlottesville, Virginia, chanting "Jews will not erase us," were members of the left. People marching through Charlottesville chanting "blood and soil," you know, just like 80 or so years ago, 85 years ago. Yeah, that's the left. Now, never mind the fact that the left I know about and was more known for chanting "workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains." I mean, it's a kind of a mouthful, and that's probably why they didn't do so well. And never mind the fact that there wasn't one hammer and sickle to be seen anywhere in Charlottesville, Virginia. Proud son of Stanford and helmet-headed radio host of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan, says it was the left versus the left. Have you calmed down yet? Can we go on with the clip? Because it's not going to get any better. Are you done with the... Yeah, I know. Me too. Sorry, Cletus. It's not going to get any easier. It's not going to get any better. It may get more stupid. If Michael in Madison is listening right now, he's kicking furniture. Oh, my God.
What we saw in Charlottesville yesterday was not a clash between left and right, which is what the media wants you to think, but a clash between the left and the left. You know, I was talking, Jeff, we were talking about this morning in the production meeting that...
No, really. They have a production meeting in the morning at American Family Association Radio. They talk about... They actually... Well, I guess you'd have to... They actually plot out the goofy bullshit that they're going to say. And maybe they figure out which way it will have more appeal to the rubes. Yeah. So him and Jeff had a production meeting this morning.
You know, this is kind of like the Sunnis. You were the one that suggested this. Yeah. It's kind of like the...
It reminds you of the Shiites versus the Sunnis. They're both... outside are considered, you know, radical.
Okay, a number of people have now begun kicking furniture. It's going to be a hard night for the furniture here. Antifa versus Nazis is the same. Did you get that? It's the same as Sunnis versus Shia, because Sunnis versus Shia are both outside groups in Islam. Yeah, I know. I see it's a bad night for the furniture over at Shea Brother Deacon Asa. Okay, then, Brian, you cream cheese helmet-haired fuckwad. Why was your beloved president defending the members of the left and left then, hmm? Yeah, this would probably be a good time to mention, not that I need to, given the Horn Family Community Congregation is plenty intelligent, but this might be a good time for me to mention that the largest sect within Islam in the world is Sunni, measured in hundreds of millions of people. Second is probably Shia. And the other flavors and they bring up a distant third and fourth and fifth and sixth. But once again, you have to imagine Emery and Eileen sitting there in their matching Barca loungers in the trailer. Or perhaps they're driving down the road in their rusted out 1993 Chevy Caprice with the McCain Palin sticker still on it, and the Bush Quail sticker still on it. I'm sorry, they're Dole Who the Fuck Ever sticker, Bush Quail. But I don't know, maybe they transferred that over from the 1979 Caprice, the old Bush Quail sticker. And looking at each other and going, you know, that Brian Fisher, he is so smart. That's exactly what it was. It's just like them Shia and them Sunnis, and they all want to bring Sharia law down on us.
But they're trying to implement their own version of Sharia, and we're seeing this now. Two sides of the left are trying.
Okay, that was unfair of me because I knew Jeff there was going to bring in Sharia. God almighty. See, I can't use the hockey puck, so I wind up barking mad.
Trying to establish their own version. Which version of socialism is going to be the prominent one?
And I think that's an absolutely brilliant analogy. If Jeff wasn't sitting here in the studio, I would have taken credit for that and not told you where I got it. No, I'm just kidding. I think it's
no, he's just kidding because if Jeff wasn't sitting there in the studio, he would have taken credit for it. And hey, he's kind of taking credit for it anyway because he's a white wing evangelical Christian, and that means he's a liar. And he takes things that. But I wouldn't take credit for that if I were you, Bri, old buddy, because it is stupidly, ahistorically wrong. With a capital R. Yeah? Yep, I knew it. Furniture getting kicked in Madison. Unite the what now? So the loose coalition of scum who gathered to terrorize Charlottesville under the banner of Unite the Right are actually the left? That'll be news to them. You know, that's true. That's true, Michael. Wouldn't you love to see helmet-headed proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher, walk up to one of those scum and say, by the way, you're just a socialist. You're the left. They'd beat him within an inch of his helmet-headed life. Socialist, fuck you! Commie! I know. But see, this is and this goes back to people like Jonah Goldberg. Bart Cop used to have so much fun with Jonah Goldberg and his mama Lucy Ann. But Jonah Goldberg saying that because National Socialism had the word socialism in it, it really is socialism. But of course it isn't. It was socialism the way Oh, I don't know. Trying to think of something really stupid. The way curling is socialism. In other words, not even vaguely related. Well, I'm sorry, Marty. What's up with Stanford? They let Condi Rice through, this scum Brian Fisher, a couple of rapists who got off easy, John Elway, now who? Did I mention I like the Broncos? it's just proof that no institution has perfect admissions policies. Right? And I know, you're working and you're sober, Marty. I'm working and I'm sober. Kind of permanently so. I'm just lashed to the mast here, babies. Y'all have the option of the beeswax in the ears. I got to listen to the siren song.
Just like the Sunnis and the Shias. They're both wearing the same color uniform, the uniform of socialism and socialist ideals, and they're completely at war with each other.
Brian Fisher is what a stupid Christian thinks a smart Christian sounds like. Oh. But good for evangelical Christianity providing some cover for goddamn Nazis. Did you know? Yeah, not a lot of talk about Nazis in there. Well, of course they're not. I mean, they're not wearing the uniform, the snappy uniforms by Hugo Boss. So they can't possibly. Oh, Jesus. When fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross. So that's just one instance of the evangelicals providing cover for Nazis. How about evangelicals who just advocate the same thing Nazis do? Let's check in with Kevin Swanson, shall we?
I'm going to suggest that there is a connection between sexualized public schools, sexualized governors, and sexualized state agencies. Sexualized public schools that violate God's law with high levels of flagrancy, and governors who are heavily sexualized, violating God's laws with the highest levels of flagrancy. And sexualized state agencies dragged into rape scandals, which, by the way, rape is also against God's law. And I guess it must be against state law. Which I'm not getting why, though. Do you understand why?
No.
I'm not getting that. Why in the world?
Are you, huh? What? Who? What? Edith? Huh? Okay, so sexualized public schools. I'm going to back up again for a minute, if that's okay. Yeah, because, like you, I really need to digest this.
Is high levels of flagrancy. And governors who are heavily sexualized, violating God's laws with the highest levels of flagrancy. And sexualized state agencies dragged into rape scandals, which, by the way, rape is also against God's law, and I guess it must be against state law. Which I'm not getting why, though.
I don't think Dr. Bill could even explain basic civics to this clown, Kevin Swanson. Now, that's a bridge too far. He doesn't get why rape would be illegal under state laws. He doesn't understand that the United States is comprised of 50 separate petty nations, all of whom make different laws and all of whom have different standards of proof and different wording for things like arson and rape and kidnapping. I mean, hell, in West Virginia, for instance, unless they've managed to finally get around to changing it, let's say you bust somebody for, transporting 100-pound bale of pot. Well, your indictment had better, by God, read that the person had a 100-pound bale of marijuana, marijuana, because that's how it's spelled. That's how it's illegal in the West Virginia code. Because, you know, 50 petty state, the little 50 petty kingdoms. But Kevin Swanson, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, well, he doesn't understand why there's a rape, why individual states have rape laws. I told you this would be sort of a tonic, Carol. Carol says, is Kevin for state-sanctioned rape? I'm confused. I ain't altogether okay either, Carol, but all we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it.
Do you understand why? I'm not getting that. Why in the world is a sexual crime against the law in the state of Washington if the other forms of crimes are not against the law in the state of Washington? See, this is...
Well, because the other things that you're calling crimes aren't crimes, dumbass, but no.
This is confusing to me. Well, today, entire states are defined by homosexuality, adultery, rape, and educating the kids in the sexual confusion of the day as early as kindergarten. And by the way, trying to understand the problem in these state agencies when it comes to sexual issues is like trying to discern if there's a rape going on in a whorehouse.
I bet he got that in the production meeting with Jeff too. Who knows?
Are you with me here?
Yeah.
There's confusion here, friends. There is outrageous confusion. The whole system is wrapped up in moral chaos, and it's hardly worth talking about morals when the worst possible abominations are accepted in the state of Washington. All right, and it's affecting the public schools, and it's time to get kids out of the public schools.
We need to burn them down.
Get the kids out of the whorehouses.
Yeah. Oh, did you catch that? It's time to get the kids out of the public schools. We need to burn them down. Nazis burn books. These guys are kicking it up a notch and burning the whole school. But no, it's really nothing new either, because... the Klan and various white supremacist organizations had a taste for burning down schools or churches, anywhere that something resembling learning could take place. And yes, learning took place in churches in the black community. Yeah, burning. We need to burn them down. Yeah, probably true, Carol. A whorehouse. Finally, Kevin Swanson's talking about something he knows. Oh, yeah, one of these days he's going to be caught snorting meth off a gay hooker's butt. And he's in Colorado, just like the last guy who got, Ted Haggard, just like, remember him? Got caught snorting meth off a gay hooker's butt? It'll happen. It'll happen, yeah.
You know, if you transported parents from the 1950s into 2017, they would want to burn these schools down.
Yes, they would burn them down. They would tear the bricks out of the walls. They would use the bricks to stone the apostates.
Yeah, for stoning. Stoning. Let me give you a quick warning. If the White Rose stream just came back up, if you lose it again, it's because Ben is rebooting the server. So that's what that is. Just technical note. Note coming from Michael in Madison. National socialism is what now? I always love when some scum trots out that old chestnut. It's so easy and fun to knock down. So North Korea, the DPRK, is a Democratic People's Republic, East Germany, the DDR, was a democratic republic, and China's a people's republic, and the Miami Dolphins are tiny whales who zip into their own human suits on Sundays. Oh, my God. First cowbell of the week. First cowbell back from vacation. I'm going to read that again just so you can get the full, the delicious flavor of it. I always love when some scum trots out that old chestnut. It's so easy and fun to knock down. So, North Korea, the DPRK, is a Democratic People's Republic, eh? East Germany, the DDR, was a Democratic Republic, and China is a People's Republic, and the Miami Dolphins are tiny whales who zip into their human suits on Sundays. That last one's epic. That's, I mean, I want to get that put on a bronze plaque and hang it in the Horn Studio, tiny as it is. Maybe it would be a tiny bronze plaque because, after all, the Miami Dolphins are tiny whales. Oh. But yeah, that's about the size of it. So we're going to wrap up now that we've got school burning. Oh, by the way, of course, Kevin Swanson wasn't. I want to make something clear here because this is an important point. Kevin Swanson, and whoever the turd is who's there saying burn them down, they're not speaking metaphorically. They have a deeply and sincerely held religious belief that they call Christian, that because public schools in Washington state, in this particular instance, because they don't murder little gay children, that they are violating their God's law. And that consequently, those schools in Washington state should not metaphorically, but actually, be burned down. When I talk about the way we fetishize the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, this is exactly what I'm talking about. You have here a man with an organization that is tax exempt under the IRS code 501c3 who is consuming a portion of the public commons to advocate for people, someone, some Christian, or a lot of Christians, to start burning down schools. Yeah, we yuck it up. We have our fun. We carry on prayer meeting Wednesday. Look at the silly Christian. And just as we talked about on Monday night, sometimes you laugh at the stupid Nazis. But almost all the time, you are best to take them at their word. And this guy is a right-wing theocratic fascist who would be more than welcome in Nazi circles and Klan gatherings, etc. But because we have a fetishized vision of the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, we say, well, you know, I mean, he's just sitting out there telling people they ought to burn down schools. And, I mean, it's not like he's actually going to burn down schools because the linguistic construction that he used was just that we ought to. He didn't say he's going to right now, this minute, this instant. Hell, he's in Colorado. He's not even in Washington. So he poses no threat to burn down a school in Washington. There's not a clear and present danger. Maybe the danger is clear, but it isn't present because he's in Colorado and the schools are in Washington. So in order for the rest of us to have freedom, we're going to let Kevin Swanson sit there and talk about burning down schools. Not that it might be, not metaphorically, but actually. We're going to let Kevin Swanson encourage maybe somebody in Washington, where there are no small number of right-wing hate groups. We're going to let Kevin Swanson sort of dog whistle it out there and hope that somebody burns down some schools in Washington, in Kevin Swanson's mind, preferably with some little gay children in it. Yeah, I tend to agree, Carol. Kevin Swanson is the guy wearing nipple clamps under that cheap suit as he gets a stiffy, sanctioning state rape, burning down schools, and giving away secrets about his leisure time from the microphone. Yeah. And here's the fun part, because we've already seen this in action. Remember when the Beckerhead went on and on and on, blathering and blathering and blathering and blathering and blathering about the Tides Foundation until some guy drank up a big bottle of courage and went out to shoot up the Tides Foundation, but mercifully got busted for DUI on the way because he was so liquored up but he had a trunk full of guns? Remember that? And remember how Glenn the Beckerhead said, "Well, I can't possibly be responsible for something some crazy person says. I'm just an entertainer. I mean, I just say things. If people choose to act on them, well, that's not my fault." You remember how night after night after night after night after night after goddamn night, Bill O'Reilly, serial sexual abuser Bill O'Reilly, remember how he would go on about Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, until somebody who listened to him finally got a hunting rifle with a really high quality scope on it and murdered Dr. Tiller in his church? And then, of course, Bill O'Reilly said, "Well, I'm just an entertainer. I mean, the First Amendment protects me. There's no way that I could possibly foresee that someone would hear me say Tiller the Killer and dog whistling that a man should be assassinated and then go and assassinate him. I mean, what about my freedom?" Or Bernie Goldberg and Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage, who so bored into the brain of a man named Adkisson that he went in and shot up a production of Annie by children at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation. I read part of his manifesto a couple of months back. But then Goldberg and O'Reilly and Savage and Limbaugh said, "Well, my friends, I am an entertainer. I merely say things to entertain. There is no way I could reasonably foresee," because the lawyers tell him to use that reasonably foresee language because it's important, "there's no way I could reasonably foresee that a man would listen to my words and then start acting on them and start go out and try to kill people because of the hate that I pump into the public airwaves every day of my filthy, misbegotten, misanthropic life. There's no way, because I have to have First Amendment freedom, my friends." That's true. Brother Deacon Asa says your First Amendment is almost as fetishized as your Second. Well, I'd say it's every bit as fetishized, Asa, where the religion industry is concerned, because this is one of those times when we come back to one of the central points that I've made over the years. There is nothing left of the First Amendment except a life support system for the religion industry. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. So don't be surprised, maybe, if some little red schoolhouse. There's a reason they paint them red. It's commie schools. Don't be surprised if maybe a little red schoolhouse in Washington, all the public schools are commie public schools. To Kevin Swanson, don't be surprised if one of them in Washington or Oregon or New York or Alabama or where the fuck ever goes up in flames. And don't be surprised when we find out that the guy was listening to Kevin Swanson and his ilk. And don't be surprised when the for-profit media says, well, the man was obviously deranged. You're batting a million tonight, Carol Baker. It's fetishized for them when we say what we think. When we defend actual morality and decency in defending the defenseless, we're shouted down as commies. Oh, and fuck them in the ass with a cactus. Good. Yes, absolutely. Especially the cactus. Scott in San Diego says, acting on Rush's words, so what? Does Rush throw a switch that affects the words he delivers on behalf of his paid sponsors? Certainly he expects his listeners to act on his words for, say, Snapple and all his other shitty sponsors. Snapple got away from him. It's been a while since he was doing Snapple, but, General Steel Buildings and Lumber Liquidators Floors, and I haven't listened in so long, I don't know who all sponsor him, but yeah, point well made, Scott. He damn sure expects people to act on his words when it's commercial speech. But when these turds, these right-wing turds, these cousins of Nazis, these proto-fascists, neo-fascists, actual fascists, when they start telling people to burn schools and hurt other people and torment little gay children or little children they perceive to be gay or trans or whatever, well, then they're not. Well, I'm only an entertainer, my friend. Let's run over to Skype and check in with Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
I think we've all got a pretty good idea, don't we?
Yeah. I listened to you yesterday, and it's like, okay, he's channeling my inner, it's like, why couldn't people see this a while back? And,
let's stop there for a minute, Clarity. And by the way, thank you for the kind words. I think a lot of us saw it. You saw it. I saw it. I've been talking about it for years. God knows Malloy's been talking about it for even longer.
Oh,
Rick
yeah.
Smith's been talking about it. Guy James talked about it back in the day.
Yeah.
The question isn't, we saw it. It was there. We weren't imagining it. Did other people, was it simply because they didn't have access to the message? Or was it because they were in some sort of state of denial? Is it one of those 12-step things? Help me here.
Well, and people that I never would have imagined would have voted for Trump. Today on Sam Cedar, he interviewed somebody that was talking about that there is no centrist Democrat. The only reason you campaign as a centrist Democrat is because you get more money from the corporations. But as far as the actual platforms and stuff, the centrist stuff is not, where the people are at and where the actual party is. But what I almost felt, like I was in a bubble. From election night, it's like, I can't believe this, that this many people bought into it. And that 81% of evangelicals voted for Trump. Only 16% of evangelicals voted for Clinton. So that says a lot right there, as far as prayer meeting goes. They subscribe to the army of God, the big fist. God, our God is mightier than yours. you know, and it just falls right into when Trump says we're never going to be, you know, second rate to anybody. And they can't argue with that, you know, because we are a righteous Christian nation. And, you know, it's they're just as high as the guys that are, you know, shooting up fentanyl down the street. But they're high on, you know, this self-righteousness and their own endorphins from feeling like there's nothing that they're doing is even questionable, because they're on the side of might and justice. And of course the people that, you know, we're threatening, they're communists. And of course they're, you know, North Korea is evil and stuff. That's an easy, that's easy pickings, you know, but,
That ain't low hanging fruit. That's fruit rotten on the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hang on for a minute, because I want to go back and I want to go back to this question of centrists, because Carol makes a valid observation. She says, "Define centrist. What used to be the center is now the radical left. What they now call the center is definitely right wing." I mean, and I think there's truth in that, don't you?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
If I'm a radical lefty because I want people to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick, and not be financially ruined. Frankly, I'm not going to be welcome in a lot of the leftish circles of the rest of the world. In fact, I'm going to be laughed out into the streets as something approaching, I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe center right.
Well, last night on the Pacifica Evening News, they talked to a guy that's been following these prayer, you know, patriot prayer things, and they're going right into the center of urban areas where there is a lot of Democrats and a lot of people of color, and trying to provoke, you know, violence so they can, you know, get it on film. Get, you know, and sue them for infringing on their right of speech. In fact, it's going on right now. San Francisco is trying to stop the thing there at Chrissy Field. Anyway, the guy that's heading this prayer meeting at Chrissy Field is a person of color who is a evangelical. And he said, "Why can't we be here? You know, we have a, you know, a gay person and a lesbian and a trans person, you know, blah, blah, blah. So here's our rainbow." And he said they're just going around to these urban centers and doing, you know, having these prayer meetings. But their agenda is, you know, astroturfing for the Koch brothers. And he said, you know, what we need to do is get those communists out of out of Sacramento, you know, and the communists in Berkeley and the communists in Oakland. And, you know, it's like, what? Communists? You mean the people that want to have housing that people can afford, that want to, you know, have harm reduction programs, you know, et cetera, et cetera, which I guess is really radical.
And I don't know if you were listening last night when I played that clip of Reagan at Neshoba County, Mississippi Fair August of 1980. Did you notice in there about how he said, "And well, we're going to reform welfare"? That was 1980. And by 15 years later, we talk about the shifting along the political spectrum. By 15 years later,
Bubba did it for him.
You've got Bill Clinton, an alleged Democrat, saying, and he was a Democrat. I shouldn't say alleged.
But a Southern Democrat.
Yeah, but you've got Bill Clinton saying that, and we went over this, what, before I went on vacation, you know, we'd had a great watershed moment in America, a great moment of freedom, because we'd significantly reduced the dependency of people on welfare. Not because we made them well off enough to not need welfare, but because we just took it the hell away from them.
Well, it's a misnomer that we actually call it welfare, because nobody can live honestly on, you know, on what they pay for somebody to live on. You can't have a vehicle to look for work. you can't have decent clothing. You know, any emergency, you're back at the check cashing place. You know, and you look at social support programs in Europe, and of course that's what they're campaigning against. Well, we can't possibly let things happen like they are in Europe, you know, because there's no freedom there. And it's like, yeah, there's no freedom to live on the street and die of HIV because you're not getting condoms or you're sharing needles, blah blah blah, you know.
But I don't see Mercedes-Benz and BMW being unable to sell cars in Europe. Those are pretty high end luxury items, and they're still moving. Real estate is really pricey, and people are still able to afford it and purchase it.
Well, and you notice that when they raised the taxes in France, the doctors didn't all leave the country.
No.
You know, they're middle class, and middle class is enough. You know, really, we forget what middle class is. It's, you know, it's $89,000 a year for a family of four. And you know, in certain urban areas, that's not really middle class at all. But we think that teachers are middle class, and teachers are no longer middle class.
Oh no, hell no. No. I know in the state of West Virginia, a teacher on his or her first year lives and will continue to live for years after in or at poverty levels.
Yeah. The only thing that's changed is they can write off their student loan payments. You know, they get a deduction for that now. But, you know, DeVos is probably trying to take that away, too. They're trying to renege on the program where you work in public service for 10 years to get forgiveness for your student loans. They're trying to take that away. And they're trying to, you know, change it so that it's only certain professions, you know, make it real narrow as far as what public service is that you could write off. You know, they're just trying to, they're micromanaging, you know, from the Department of Education.
I'm glad you mentioned Betsy DeVos, because frankly, there's a nexus between her right-wing evangelicalism and the right-wing evangelicalism of Kevin Swanson, who wants to burn down schools. Since your name is Clarity, just for clarity's sake, a reverse cowbell. I'm not saying that we need to clamp down on free speech in the United States by any stretch of the imagination. But does it resonate with you when I try to explain what I mean by the fetishization of the First Amendment? Because I say these things, and sometimes I type them, and in a recent moment, it was like, God damn, you know, I don't want you to be in charge of the Inquisition. You know, I'm not putting anybody up against any goddamn walls. But I would like us to have a common understanding that of what the law actually is. I'm not advocating for an extension or a modification of law. I'm talking about applying the law as it stands. That inciting people to violence, inciting breaches of public order, is not protected speech. Is that concept coming across?
Yes, and you know what the right-wing sites put up? Jeremiah Wright, you know, 15 years old or whatever, you know, the Obama's pastor, you know, goddamn America. As if, you know, that's the same, you know, the false equivalency one more time. You don't see any white churches getting burned down.
I had word that I guess one community is at least trying to stop one of these Nazi marches by saying, no, you're a breach, you represent a terrible breach of public order, and you cannot be trusted.
And they'll sue. And there might be a federal judge sitting out there going, no, you got to let them Nazis march. With their guns. Because, see, most of these Confederate monuments take place in state or exist in states that have open carry laws. So that means that you get, once again, the nexus between the NRA's open carry and concealed carry, for that matter, campaigns, dovetailing with this urge for putches, and the next thing you know, they've got guns in the streets, and the cops are doing the Assholes and Elbows Act. So I guess it remains to be seen, doesn't it? Watch this space.
Yeah, I guess I dodged a lot of, you know, all the protests that I went to was, you know, in the aughts. There was only a couple of times when the Black Bloc came through and broke some windows and knocked over newsstands and stuff like that. But, you know, never anything like there was at Ferguson, you know, and that. I shouldn't say that, but I kind of wish people would have got that worked up before we went to Iraq. You know, I saw it coming. And I could tell that they were just throwing together a big false narrative. I mean, Tony Blair should be in the same jail cell with Rumsfeld and the whole works, you know?
Well, yeah. And you know, we've got a continuum of letting things slide. I'm back from vacation, and Agnes and I are back into our filthy habit of watching that little program in the morning.
Bless you.
I'm sorry. And
that's for your Joe ulcer.
Thank you. My ulcer appreciates it. But if it weren't so deadly damn dangerous, Clarity, it would be humorous.
Yeah.
To watch the sanctimonious moral outrage of Joe Scarborough, who is now, a guardian of democracy.
GE, we bring good things to living.
Yeah. Yeah, you do that well.
All the irony.
But the thing is, he was part of the problem. He was a big part of the problem. And for him to sit there and call on Republicans to denounce Donald Trump's words, you'll pardon me, I mean, fuck a bunch of denunciations, okay?
Yeah.
You can denounce all day long. But this being prayer meeting Wednesday, the book of James comes rapidly into play. Faith without works, babies, is dead. And there's only one thing that a Republican in Congress can do that will separate him or her from this fascist presidency, this Klan-coddling, Nazi-coddling presidency. There's only one thing, Clarity. You want to go for the cowbell?
Yeah.
And that thing is impeachment.
Yeah, the impeachment bill, 25. Oh, Tota says yes.
Oh, so glad. But because everything else is strong. And the thing is, it's sickening. Because even when one of these pustulant little Republicans gets around to saying, I don't guess Nazis are very good people, they can't denounce the president by name. You know, and their president is the very one who started the Say Their Name campaign. Don't denounce the Nazis without denouncing the guy who's empowering them. Heather Heyer's not going to be the last person to die. And the next person who dies, blood is going to flow all over the hands of Donald J. Trump and every goddamned Republican who did not act to remove him from office. They've got a group of Democrats in the House that would gladly work with them to begin the impeachment process, but nobody has that kind of courage. And that's why our country is in the jeopardy it's in, and that's why our country has been in jeopardy since January the 20th, 2017. Any issues? I mean, does that sound good to you?
Yeah, well, you know, and as far as the complacency goes, you know, Tom Daschle probably, I think I brought his name up before, you know, when somebody steps out of line, you know, the horse head or maybe, you know, a little anthrax in their Daily Mail, you know, can kind of scare the heck out of you.
And there's this jackass, what's his last name, Cohn, who desperately wants to be the chairman of the Fed, who stood right there, he's Jewish, stood right there next to Donald Trump while he was coddling Nazis yesterday, and then came out and defended him. You know, in the world, in World War II, in Europe, there were a couple of terms out there. One of them was capo, and another one was Sonderkommando. And that guy is one of those. Those were the Jews who helped kill other Jews in hopes of advancing themselves.
Well, and Sam Cedar today said that Mnuchin should step down too because he's the last Jew with Trump.
But Cohn, but what about Jared?
Well, that's family. And you know, Trump shouldn't. This was from some Nazi guy said that Trump shouldn't let a Jew steal his daughter.
No, shouldn't have given his daughter to a Jew.
Oh, given it to a Jew. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, because we're all back in Bronze Age Old Testament times when, Jared just wandered up to Trump Tower one day, had a dozen camels, a few goats, a couple of sheep, and said, I will trade you my treasures if you will but give me your daughter. And Trump said, deal. And gave him his daughter because Ivanka was, of course, a possession. She was chattel.
An LBO.
Oh, my God. grab him by the camel.
That's right.
Well, Clarity, it's been a lovely conversation.
Yes, I like as I said before, I only try to bring something that's fresh and not to just rehash my anger because, you know, we get enough of that for free.
Yeah, for me.
Yeah. And oh, I wanted to also say about the ministers who like gay meth, you know, whores. Cock rings always make the boys scream out in Jesus' name.
Jesus. It's like a home run derby for you tonight, Clarity. You're just putting them over the fence. One pitch, it's all just, you know, high hangers and over the fence. But yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And watch out. I mean, if you see anybody out there wandering around with a tiki torch and headed for the school, you might want to reach out to the authorities. Just saying.
It'd be a job because most all our new schools are concrete, so they'd be hard to burn. They have to blow them up.
Don't give them any ideas, Clarity. Thank you. Stop helping.
To tell you the truth, I think I'm probably the only person in town that listens to your show.
Well, that's true, but, well, you never know about the lurkers, right? Clarity, have a good evening, dear.
You too, Bob. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. Bye now. The one and only Clarity calling you from the great Northwest. Let's see. Over in South Carolina, Stan, David notes, and those Nazis are going to start firing those open carry guns that they toted. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what the one little Nazi said in that interview. He was the same one who said, who accused Trump of giving his daughter to a Jew. I mean, I would expect that some of the things I follow would. Where's B'nai B'rith in all of this? Has B'nai B'rith denounced Donald Trump by name? If not, why not? Just asking. So we have reached the halfway point in the program tonight. We have $125 to raise, thanks to our subscribers, thanks to Steve from Georgistan, and thanks to Joe and Paula. Of that $125, we have a $40 matching challenge on the table, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa, who will double your money up to $40. Your 5, 10, your 10 becomes 20, your 20 becomes 40. One person's 40 becomes 80. And so it would be nice, this being prayer meeting Wednesday, and I realize we probably took a real whack by having the White Rose server go down. Yeah, can't do anything about that. But anyway, it would be nice to, you know, stay even for the first 3 days back from vacation. So anybody wants to jump in, you're more than welcome. Marty says, useless trivia. I was watching the end of Suicide Squad, and what name do I see in the credits? Steve Mnuchin, executive producer. Kamala Harris must have liked the movie or invested in it or something. Oh, my God. Oh, stop it, Marty. Stop it. Kamala Harris. Brooga, brooga, brooga. Am I going to have to start turning on the reverb for Kamala Harris, too? I don't know. All right, I'm gonna take a quick break, just since we're at the halfway mark of the program, and then we'll get back into the conversation. Good God, I got a bunch of stuff in the stack. I've even got stuff that isn't Trump and Nazis. If you just can't stand Trump and Nazis anymore, if you're completely all Nazied out, well, what about a blast from your past? It was 12 years ago when a pretty white girl from Alabama disappeared while on a high school graduation trip to Aruba. Her name was Natalie Holloway. And guess what? 12 years later, her disappearance has been turned into a reality TV show. Oh, yeah. The disappearance of Natalie Holloway will appear on a network whose name I'm not going to give because, well, there's nothing like a little dead white girl who would be 30 years old now nothing like the bones of a little dead white girl to sell some soap for the for-profit media. Hoo-wee! Yeah. See, I told you there was other stuff besides Nazis. I didn't tell you it was going to be good stuff. All right, prayer meeting Wednesday continues, but we're going to take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Like the bumper? Hi. Shape is my shame, there where I used to stand. I can't remember which Brecker that was, but my God, that saxophone. Deacon Blues from Asia. Steely Dan, 1977. This is the Horn, Prayer Meeting Wednesday. It doesn't all have to be Jesus music on Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Let's run over right quick, like now, and check in far San Diego with Scott and his ventriloquist Punky.
Yes, Punky is sitting on my knee, and I'm pulling the little string to make his little beak move.
Who is not now, and never has been,
a communist.
Right.
He's not a red bird. Wow, I haven't heard that tune in a long time. I'm glad you played that. That's a groovy tune.
Oh yeah, get all your Steely Dan together, put it on random, and just walk away. And just sit, not walk away, but just sit there for a few hours. It's,
yeah,
not a lot of that stuff being produced right now.
Yeah, and it's such groovy is the best word. It's just real. You can groove to it. You know?
Yeah, it's got
great music. Maybe you can clear this up, since it was Steely Dan.
Probably not, I'll try.
I'd heard a story some years ago. As a matter of fact, a listener called in and asked me if I knew, and I didn't know. And as she presented the story to me, I was quite shocked, because that's an interesting way for a name of a band to come about. But she said, and this is years ago, that apparently Steely Dan was the nickname of some kind of steam-powered sex machine.
Oh, no, okay, yeah, let's just do this real quick.
Okay.
The term comes from William Burroughs' Naked Lunch.
Ah, okay.
And Steely Dan is a... And it's and Naked Lunch is just full of these semi-hallucinogenic rambles.
No, I personally would drop the semi.
Well, I mean, there are points when two or three words strung together actually form an idea. No, it's a brilliant piece of literature.
Yeah.
But yeah, Steely Dan's a really, really big dildo.
Okay. But is that how did the band actually?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because
right,
I mean,
well.
Because Naked Lunch is it was a classic of the beat era. Hell,
yeah.
I had to read Naked Lunch as a sophomore in college for a class called Space Age Mythology.
That's a great name for a course.
We read Space Age Mythology. We read The Psychoanalytical Meaning of History. Happiness is a Warm Puppy, the real one, you know, Charles Schulz.
Yeah.
We read The Hobbit. There was one more. Never Change Boopsy, a collection of early Doonesbury strips.
God, some of these titles, I haven't heard them referred to in some time. Jeez.
Well, The Psychoanalytical Meaning of History was probably that and Naked Lunch. My head was not okay for a couple of semesters.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Well, that's not what I called about, of course.
I live for our little digressions.
Yeah. Hey, it's the digressions that they're about the only thing that make any goddamn sense in today's world, you know? Because have you found yourself waking up each morning wondering what? Well, I wake up later than you do. But I wake up and the news cycle has been given a chance to rev up by the time I drag my gnarly ass out of bed, usually about mid-morning, California time. But I for months now, I've awakened each day with a dread. It's like a cloud hanging over the upper third of the ceiling here. And I'm thinking, what, you know, before I fire up the TV, in the back of my mind is, what the hell is the crazy bastard up to today? What fresh new hell is being presented for our listening pleasure?
Yeah, that's why the tablet sits by the bed, and you direct TV now, and then boom, and it's already on, and it's already set to that channel and that program, and it's fun for me because I know that chances are I will have already talked about what they're just getting around to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's kind of fun to compare my progressive take with their pretty much Republican take on things.
And I was this morning, I did catch a little bit of the program that you watch early in the morning on MSNBC, or as a friend of mine calls it, PMSNBC. But I was rather gratified that they showed some of the footage from that Vice News Tonight program on Monday, which, folks, if you have HBO and you have not watched Monday night's edition of Vice News Now on HBO, log on to HBO Go and fire that thing up. It's one of the best chunks of journalism that I've seen in many a moon. It's a no-bullshit approach to what the hell went on in Charlottesville. No narration, a single reporter, and they actually talked to the various participants on both sides.
I've seen it, and I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Oh, it was great. But the guy that you were quoting when you were speaking with Clarity, that bald-headed stooge who said that he had his guns and goes to the gym a lot, and he's ready for violence. Just came right out and said it, you know, with his big old face hanging out there on Vice News Tonight the other night. He's got an arrest warrant out on him by the folks in Virginia, and he did a video, which I haven't watched, but I read about, and apparently he's blubbering like a small child at the notion of... See, this shows you how not tough these bastards are. When you take away their guns and their crowds and they're facing the prospect of being confined for their nonsense, that they come apart like a cheap suit, you know? And I'll send you that link, and later I'll watch that video of him, because apparently he just breaks down and cries at the idea.
I have it here, and I'll run it in a little bit.
Okay. Well, anyway, you and Clarity were talking about that, and also mentioning what is it going to take for the Republicans, or some Republicans, to hook up with the Democrats in the House to get the articles of impeachment revved up. And see, the problem with these Republicans today, so-called Republicans, they don't know, they have their blinders on it when it comes to history. Because it was back in July of 74 that three of the five articles of impeachment against Nixon were passed. Two of them failed, but three of them passed. And while there wasn't an overwhelming vote by the Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee, there was enough of a vote in very late July of 74 to get a little bit of the handwriting on the wall in terms of Nixon's favor slipping away on even the side of some Republicans. But not enough of them came to their senses in enough time, because on November 5th of 74, there were the midterm elections, and it was not good for the Republicans. They lost 48 seats. Now, granted, this was 74, but I've said all along that Trump is going to fuck up to a fare-thee-well, and a lot of the residue is going to, it's like a car speeding down the highway, and you're standing too close to the curb, and it's been raining, and some of that mud puddle gets splashed up onto you standing there on the sidewalk. They're going to get a lot of this residue on them. And if they don't wise up early enough, come the midterms, they could be out on their asses. Not all of them, but some of them. It's looking less and less good for the Republicans in the House, in my estimation. And that's kind of a long way around to the answer that, to the question that Clarity posed. What is it going to take? Basically, it's going to take some Republicans coming to their senses about what is actually going on and just how bad this orange motherfucker is for this country and the world, I might add.
But okay. Not to just disagree for the sake of disagreement, but I think we have to take another step, Scott, and define what learning how bad he is actually means to a Republican federal office holder.
Well, I mean, I mean it in the sense that they're going to get some of that residue on them, and it's not going to be good for them. Because obviously Trump doesn't give a shit about anybody but himself. That's the venue that I'm playing in. But yeah, they see it a different way, and they do so at their peril, in my estimation, some of them.
Just to sort of drill down into this, that's something that I would submit they will not learn until they hear it only. I mean, you know, they can hear only through their backsides.
Yeah.
And if some of them get kicked out, you know, they will learn. I guess I'm arguing they will learn too late, Scott.
Well, that's my point. That's what happened in 74. It was a fucking bloodbath in the off-year elections in 74, at least for the Republicans.
But see, I don't think it will be.
Well, and it probably won't, because enough things have changed.
Well, I go back to social media. Campaigns will be targeted not just to zip codes, but down to individual streets.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it rivals actual old school retail door knocking politics, what they can do now with data. And between A, the fact that the nastiest, most cancerous knot of his congressional support is absolutely safe. Okay.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
They had their primary in Alabama last night. Mo Brooks, less brains, came in third, so he's not going to be in the runoff. Instead, it's the strange guy and Roy Tolamore.
Yeah.
Well, Mo Brooks...
Which is pretty much how I thought it was going to play out.
Mo Brooks, less brains, is still a member of Congress. He didn't have to resign to do that, I don't think. And he's up for re-election in, 18. Unless he's not. I could be wrong. I didn't research it. But the point is, if he is up for re-election, he is as safe in that 5th Congressional District of Alabama as a babe in its mama's arms. And the weird thing is, that part of Alabama, apart from a little gerrymandered district in the central part of the state, actually probably has more progressive people in it than any other district in Alabama. And Mo Brooks, less brains, is absolutely safe.
Yeah.
Louis Gohmert, 1st District of Texas, absolutely safe. Okay? Steve King, Iowa, absolutely safe. Martha Roby, Alabama, absolutely safe. Steve Scalise, Louisiana, absolutely safe in his hospital bed. Hal Rogers, the 5th District of Kentucky, absolutely safe. And I can go on for the rest of the night pointing out people who are absolutely safe, and it will be sufficient, I suspect, to maintain the congressional majority. And if it isn't, if there is a fighting chance somehow, Scott, then you know what will prevent that fighting chance? Brothers and sisters, let us open our sacred text to the Book of Pogo. We have seen the enemy, and they is us.
Yeah.
Because in the midst of all of this, I'm still seeing the goddamn precious little sparkle ponies out there talking about Hillary. No reverb, no nothing. Still blathering on about Bernie could have won when Bernie would have gotten steamrollered by Trump.
Yeah, especially in the South.
But, you know, they're still out there. And, ooh, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Bruga Bruga. And, you know, let me take a moment here, just on your dime, so to
okay.
speak.
Well, it's your dime.
let me take a moment here to say unequivocally that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is a fuck up.
Now, what was your first clue?
Well, I mean, they're beginning to pile up, and the latest, and the IT guy who was busted at the airport, well, really, you know. She's a screw-up. But she's not running the DNC anymore. Can I just point that out? That's Tom Perez and Keith Ellison. And, you know, the DNC is, you know, sort of making its own, new leadership is making its own mistakes. But that's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is what's going to happen when the elections of 2018 come around and the sparkle ponies are out there imposing purity tests on every candidate all over the country. Utterly oblivious, Scott, to the fact that in order to win, a candidate must actually bear an ability to motivate the people of the district to vote for him or her.
Yeah, as we found out in, what, Georgia not long ago, and just outside of Atlanta.
Yeah, I know the Sparkle Ponies would love to run cloned Bernie Sanders in every district in the United States. But here's the thing. Cloned Bernie Sanders would get his ass kicked in a whole lot of congressional districts in the United States. Not because cloned Bernie Sanders has bad ideas. Cloned Bernie Sanders would have the best ideas. But they will not necessarily resonate with voters in different parts of the country. Because if you mentioned the South, Scott, in the primaries, you know, which weren't rigged, he got his ass handed to him all over the South. And he got his ass handed to him in a few other places, too. He got his ass handed to him in Florida. And you can't blame everything on... You can blame our dodgy, stupid electoral system because we have one. But you cannot blame it entirely on that.
Well, front-loading those Southern Democratic primaries did not help at all.
But that's been going on for 30 years.
I know. Well, to the extent my follow-up question on the House races in 18 would be this: to the extent that there will be some Republicans that could be on shaky ground, what presents the greatest challenge to them, being primaried from the right, or in certain cases, whatever good Democratic candidates that might get out there and run? Or is it just not determinable because it's a case-by-case thing?
Because
I can't see them coming out of the 18 House elections, the Republicans, I can't see them coming out totally unscathed.
They won't come out unscathed, and you know what's interesting? You know who the ones who will get scathed are?
probably the right-thinking ones, the straight-thinking ones.
The Republicans who aren't completely bug shit crazy.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing. Yeah.
They're the ones who will get scathed.
And that's the pity of it.
They'll get replaced by a common-sense centrist Democrat. You know, maybe upstate New York. Maybe somewhere in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Maybe some Republican in... Jesus, wouldn't it be nice to get rid of Glenn Grothman in Wisconsin? But no, he's probably safe, too.
How did you describe those Democrats? What was the term that you used? The ones that'll get in?
Did I say did I say centrist? Common sense?
And made me, you're old enough to remember Moms Mabley, the old lady black comedian of the 60s and beyond and before. She, the way she described her old man is sort of the way I describe these Democrats that'll get in. They're weaker than water, which is about right, I think.
Well, I think it is about right.
But
so, and the thing is, there are precious few of those common sense Republicans in the first place, Scott.
Oh, I know.
And I don't think there are enough of them that if we beat every one of them with a Democrat, most of whom will not be Bernie or even Bernie-crats, it wouldn't be enough to retake the House. And if the Democrats retake the House by one seat, okay, there's value in that. But that means that, I don't know. Nancy Pelosi's done a pretty damn good job keeping everybody whipped into line. But it's still going to be awfully hard to bring on action to remove Donald Trump from office.
Yeah.
And then there's the Senate.
Well,
by the way, Brother Deacon Asa has a comment for you.
Oh, good.
And, oh, no, he's not going after you or anything.
Oh, good. Even better good.
he's just pointing out, he says, you know, I think we romanticize the events, what done happened to Nixon. But reality is slightly different. Once Nixon was out on his ass, it only took the American people one single election cycle to put a pig-eyed right-winger right back in the White House. We might be a little too optimistic as to what happens next, even if Trump gets kicked out on his ass. And going back, since I raised the issue last night about Reagan in Neshoba County, Mississippi in August 1980, I want to point out that after he dog-whistled the Klan there, Jimmy Carter condemned it. And so did a couple of other people. But the for-profit media jumped out and said, well, no, of course. I mean, it's his political philosophy. Naturally, Ronald Reagan, the great communicator, would talk about states' rights because he's a states' rights Republican. Oh, not a problem. I mean, well, what do you mean, dog whistler? There's not hardly no Klan at all no more.
Yeah, that was Carter was a reaction, not so much to Nixon, but in a lot of ways to Gerry Ford, who pardoned Nixon.
Yeah.
Which at the time, I lost a lot of respect for Gerald Ford. I didn't have a lot to start with, but what respect I did have went away. And I can see now, you know, with the wisdom of time and maturity, that he probably did the right thing in the grand scheme of things. But it set us up to give us Carter. But poor Carter came to Washington, you know, and was definitely not up to dealing with the Democratic-controlled Senate of that era. Senate, and also the House. He did not get along with the folks on the Hill of his own damn party. And I can only hope that the same happens to Trump. You know, they're in the catbird seat in the sense that they've got the damn House and Senate and the White House. But Trump is such a screw-up and keeps pissing on the Republicans' parade in a lot of ways in the House and Senate that they can't get any damn momentum. Or what momentum they get goes away when he goes into one of his tantrums. Which probably works on some level, because if you can keep them from doing bad, if you can keep them from doing much of anything, that would include some of the bad stuff. So maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. I'm always looking for the pony.
I understand.
And my shovel, you know?
Yeah. So. But only time will tell, right?
That's true. But it'll prove to be interesting. It surely will.
The Democrats also ran a couple of candidates. The really unhealthy-looking white guy beat the black guy in the Democratic primary by more than 50%. So, boom, no runoff. He's just he's the sacrificial lamb sitting up on the altar going, in November. And the betting people are saying that the junior senator, oh my God, the junior senator from the state of Alabama in the new Congress will be, I kid you not, Roy Tolamore.
Yeah.
A man who, by the way, I got to get better at this. He set up a religious freedom foundation, brought in just horse gagging loads of money, and it's all tax free, and paid himself and his wife $1.3 million for Jesus, because they know how Jesus would spend it. They know what Jesus's taste would be in fine, say, German automobiles.
Well, and that's standard operating procedure for those people, because the laws are set up that they can do that shit.
And the poor little sacrificial lamb Democrat won't have two dimes to rub together, and is already painted as a fetus-eating commie.
Who is that, by the way? Because I don't even know.
Well, if you give me a minute, I'll tell you.
Okay. I mean, I was following it a little bit last night, the primary in Alabama, but I wasn't paying a lot of attention to the Democratic side. There were a couple of candidates running, and if you held a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you who they were.
Let's see. Yeah, there it is. Mo Brooks just announced from the podium that he will run for Congress in 2018 for a fifth term. Mo Brooks, less brains. This is from AL.com. You go all the way down. Nothing about the Democrat. Everything's about the Republican candidates. The guy's name is Jones. Doesn't even merit a photograph at the top of the post. Let's see. Session, yada yada, Oliver Bentley, yada yada. Roy Tolamore. Do you like that name, by the way, Roy Tolamore?
Yeah, I'm not sure I get it though.
Ayatollah Roy Tola.
Okay, you got it. Okay, I'm a little slow today.
Well, no, if you're not getting it, everybody else isn't getting it either. But Mo Brooks, Les Brains, The Strange Guy, and Roy Tolamore.
Luther Strange. I love that name.
Yeah, Big Luther Strange, 6'8" tall, played basketball.
Good Lord. there's so much of him, too.
The general election will be held on December 12th. And that's when Roy Tola Moore, that's when the Roy Tola will become a senator from Alabama. Former U.S. Attorney Doug Jones.
Doug Jones, okay.
Beat a guy by the name of Robert Kennedy Jr. At least they got a candidate. I mean, at least they bothered to run a candidate. The Alabama Democratic Party is hopeless and moribund, but at least they ran a candidate. And there's, I'm sitting here watching, reading. And that's all he gets. That's all Doug Jones gets is, because no candidate received a majority of the vote, more, 40% with votes still being tallied, and Strange, 32%, will go head-to-head in a runoff on September 26th, with the winner likely cruising to a general election victory on December 12th. In Tuesday's Democratic primary, former U.S. Attorney Doug Jones easily beat political novice Robert Kennedy Jr., no relation to those Kennedys. I'm not shitting you. That's how it's actually written. And
I wonder,
this is by a real newspaper, by a real journalist.
When it comes to the special election in December, you said, what kind of support do you think Doug Jones is going to get from the national Democratic Senate?
None. Zero. It'll be money thrown down a rat hole. No, not fuck them. I mean, if you've got a rusted garbage scow of a boat that's more hole than boat, do you throw money into it in the hopes that it'll someday float?
No, but that's one of the problems with the Democratic Party, nationally anyway, especially the ones that the national Senate race funding operation and the national Democratic House race funding operation every 2, 4, or 6 years, they roll over. I mean, especially in these places where the local folks are hard pressed to even put a candidate up, okay, to even run, and then they wimp out. And I understand throwing money down a rat hole, but sometimes, I mean, if the Democrats on a local basis or a statewide basis in some of these far-flung areas aren't even making an attempt, isn't it? I'd rather go down fighting, to tell you the truth, you know, with not having much of a hope of winning, but knowing that I put up a hell of a fight and made some points and put some points on the board, even though I didn't win. But that's just me. I'm kind of old school that way.
Well, look, you want to get an idea why nobody's going to throw money into this campaign? Go to DougJonesForSenate.com.
Okay.
Look at his picture. I'm sure he's a great guy. I'd probably he's a University of Alabama alum. You'd probably love to go to a football game with him. Enjoy it a hell of a lot more than going with Big Luther Strange or Mo Brooks Les Brains or Roy Tola Moore.
Did you say he was a state's attorney or a U.S. attorney?
He was a former U.S. attorney.
Well, God, that's got to count for something. That he must have a record.
Yeah, it means he's a commie. Oh. He's a Democrat and a former U.S. attorney. That means he's a commie.
Well, yeah, I guess when you're talking Alabama speak, that's what they hear.
Go on down and read Meet Doug Jones. It's an impressive little bio. But it's not going to get him over the fetus hump or the gun hump. This guy, as a U.S. attorney, has seen what our firearms fetish has done in communities. And he probably knows a little bit about the dangers posed by radical right-wing anti-abortion extremists. He's done. And the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee isn't going to waste any money on him, even though it's an off-year election, simply because that seat doesn't mean anything.
Now, I can understand that. I just, you know, one thing I liked about Bernie, he was in there fighting until there wasn't any point to doing it anymore. And going up against the Hillary machine, which it was, you know, it was stacked against him from the very get-go, and it also didn't help that things were manipulated, which is a kind way of putting it, in a lot of these primaries, okay? But he still showed up, you know? And maybe it's true. I mean, it likely is true, Bob, that we're going to just have to write off these chunks of America.
Well,
unless something drastically changes.
No, well, I understand why you'd say that, and I've said it, and but again, I had
you're gonna make me say we're all screwed again. That's what you want to do here.
Well, I gotta admit, it feels like a win.
Here I'm trying to be a little merry fucking sunshine, and you're trying to make me say, oh God, we're all screwed, you know.
but you know, when I took back the rental car, you know, they've got these travel the computer in the car and it, and we spent 60 hours in it, and that was 60 hours through the countryside. That was 60 hours talking to Agnes talking to me. We were each other's captive audiences, she said earlier, and I'm. It's part of the rant that hasn't happened yet, but may yet happen. We cannot, Scott, simply write off the South. Because if we do that, we guarantee that the South will continue to be a millstone around the neck of the Union while they remain
in. Yeah, I don't want us to, but sometimes you paint a picture that makes me wonder, what's the point? And that's saying something coming from me.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, the point is, I mean, if you could ever get the candidate, I mean, the momentum and the talk behind John Ossoff's campaign was true. If you could ever get a candidate who could pick off one of these freaks,
yeah,
you would have done something. And like any edifice whose foundation is made of dry and crumbling clay, once you crack it, the whole goddamn thing's going to come down. And it's happened, and it's happened before.
There are candidates like that. I forget his name, but I saw a guy on with Charlie Rose the other night. He's the Democratic mayor of Louisville, Kentucky. And if you have a chance, go to charlierose.com, I think it is. And look at that interview. It's from a couple of nights ago. It's about a 12, 15-minute interview. This guy is great. This guy is running Louisville on all eight cylinders, and people like him, and shit is getting done, okay? And he's a Democrat. Find out what he's eating. What are they feeding him?
Precisely.
What are they watering him?
And that's the rant right there.
All right.
It is not impossible to craft a message that will work in the South. It probably will have more resonance if it's not coming from somebody who talks like this.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And that's a form of bigotry on my part. I apologize for it.
That's a fact of life. There's no bigotry involved, Bob.
Or some, okay, prejudice, whatever.
Interlopers is how they're referred to.
Carpetbaggers is the word that's used.
Well, yeah, but I'm a fan of Mad Men, and the tobacco executive from Lucky Strike used to call them these northern interlopers from the federal government, you know, coming in and telling us that smoking causes dread disease. He couldn't
and you forget outside agitators.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so here's another little piece of the big rant. Down on I-10, maybe Steve from China, who's presently Steve from the Gulf Coast, down along I-10, if you're traveling east on Interstate 10 from Mississippi into Alabama, you will come across a welcome center. And on the interstate, Scott, welcome centers are usually kind of blasé.
It's dirty restrooms, vending machines, yeah, and a place to stretch
right. If the
your
vending
leg.
Machines work and the restrooms aren't filthy, you're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
There is a welcome center, an Alabama welcome center on I-10 that is breathtakingly beautiful. Maybe I should post a picture of it. It's got a lighthouse cupola on top of it. It's built with hurricane-proof glass. It has bas-relief sculptures of sea craft and marine life sculpted into the bricks. In other words, they built the bricks out a little bit, and then they sculpted them away to create these lovely bas-relief sculptures all the way around the building. Sharks and seahorses and octopi and shrimp boats and sailboats and pirate ships, okay? You walk inside, and the inlaid floor is mosaics of sea life.
Oh, wow.
And it's all glassed in, and it's got two huge restrooms for each gender. And a little interior glassed in shop that's got pamphlets for every tourist attraction in the state of Alabama. And a spot where the picture of Robert Bentley used to be, because they haven't gotten the new governor's picture taken yet.
No.
Because it had to come down after he got caught saying, "Honey, I love fondling your breastises, because I'm a Christian." Saying that, of course, to a woman who wasn't his wife of 50 years. And the thing is designed not just as a welcome center, but as a hurricane evacuation point.
Mm.
It's designed to withstand, the hurricane winds can blow all around it, the seas can rise and the storm surge can come. But if you're on the highway there when the hurricane hits and they tell you to get off the goddamn road,
that's your refuge.
You're going to live.
Yeah.
Now, the state of Alabama did not build that. You remember when Barack Obama got into so much shit for saying, you know, you didn't build that? Well,
yeah,
the state of Alabama did not build that. That was we, the people of the United States. That was tax dollars from California and New York and Massachusetts, from Minnesota, that went down there to build. And it is, I'm not kidding, it is goddamn beautiful.
Well, as you were describing it, I've never been down there to that part of the country. I wanted to go.
You could go just to see that. And feel, and, you know, there's no admission fee. Oh, and God, you stand there and, you know, maybe you're me and Agnes and you're coming from down out of the hills. And you just stand there on that parking lot. And you feel just that southern coastal heat beating down on you. And I got to be honest, it's hotter than fuck, but it feels so good.
Yeah.
Oh, it feels good. And, of course, the food ain't shabby around there either.
No.
but I come back to the point. Alabama didn't build that. That was money that got worked into a bill that somehow or another, you know, that's just, remember when the Republicans hated pork?
Yeah.
Well, that's pork that was brought to Alabama by Richard Shelby, who has some considerable tenure, and by Jeff Sessions, who's been there for a while, and by the members of Congress. But it's still monies that were provided by that big federal government that everybody in Alabama hates.
Except when shit happens.
Except when they want to build a goddamn intergalactic spaceport, hurricane-proof welcome center on the Alabama state line.
Well, and people are so short-sighted. I understand that there is nonsense pork, like the mating habits of, you know, six-legged, one-eyed beetles or some shit that you're, that Proxmire, Senator Proxmire used to have. What was that?
The golden fleece.
You know, and that was so entertaining. Boy, those innocent days, you know, when that's all we worried about was a few million bucks being spent badly, or maybe not quite as wisely as it needed to be. But damn it, there is good pork. And you've just described some very practical, useful, attractive, well put together result of pork. What are people, what are they thinking, you know? You know, and a candidate, getting back to a candidate that runs, preferably homebred, down in these regions, to get that point across to people saying, you know, this is part of what we do. We are you, folks. You know, you elect us to do a job, and this is part of the job that we're doing for you. And it's not wasteful. It's very practical. It's easy on the eye, okay? And it may save your ass. Now, how much selling do you have to do when you put it that way? Or are these people so entrenched in their stupidity or pig-headedness that they can't even see it when it's presented that way? I mean, I've dealt with some pig-ignorant people in my life, but you've got to get up pretty early or stay up pretty late.
Well, and see, without you know, just drawing the conversation out into the ether, that's part of the problem. It ain't all ignorance plays a part of it, but it isn't all necessarily ignorance. Or, okay, maybe it is. Ignorance is a big part of it, but it's not stupidity.
Unawareness may be the better word.
Unawareness would work, but it's also cognitive dissonance, because every Alabamian who looks to that welcome center with pride and then turns around and says, I believe in a small, limited federal government.
Yeah.
In a just universe, their head would explode.
Yeah, because of the
small, limited federal governments don't build those goddamn Taj Mahal welcome centers. And I just found a link to it, and I posted it in the chat room. Just look up I-10 East Alabama Welcome Center.
All right, I will, because the way you described it, honest to God, made me want to get on a Greyhound and head on down that way.
Let me see if it's even the right one. No, hell no, that isn't even it. It's that new.
You mean there's more than one good-looking welcome center in
Alabama?
These aren't
particularly good-looking.
Oh, okay.
But I'll have to put one on Facebook.
The way you described it, Bob, it made me think, when I used to live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, we would go up. I was married at the time to a southwest Missouri girl whose folks and family lived in Nevada, spelled like Nevada. But
yeah, I know.
Nevada, right. Down by near Joplin.
Yeah, there's a Houston, there's a Houston County, Georgia, too.
We would drive up from Tulsa to Nevada, and we would stop along the highway in Oklahoma. I forget the highway. There's a big-ass McDonald's that straddles the highway. And you pull off into the big lot, and you go up the elevator, and you can sit there and eat your Big Mac, fries, shake, and apple pie while you watch the cars zooming, to and fro. And I mean, I think at one time it was the biggest McDonald's on the face of the earth. I don't even know if it's still there, because we're talking about the 1990s when the last time I frequented it, but that's, as you were describing it, I was thinking of something that big and rather glorious in its own way. But the place in Alabama, the visitor center, is even, see, McDonald's is, after all, a fast food joint. You're talking about a point of pride for the local people down there in Alabama, and visitors from everywhere experiencing it and being damn well impressed.
And there are sculptures.
Oh God.
There are sculptures there, of in the shape of oyster shells.
I may need my little fan and my
with
smelling
highlights
salts.
Of Alabama culture and history. And it's part of the Alabama Oyster Trail. There's a model of an ant. There's a model of like an ant. Turtle colony. Inside it, showing how turtles lay their eggs and how they hatch and crawl up out through the sand and stuff. And what I'm doing right now is posting it to Facebook.
Okay, yeah, because that chances are I'd see it more easily on that.
So if people want to see this, they can go over to Facebook and have a look. I mean, it looks absent the lighthouse. It looks a little bit like, and there are even dolphins, leaping dolphins on the walls that remind you of the leaping dolphins of the Palace of Minos at Knossos. I dare say I am probably the only live radio broadcast in the United States, possibly the world this evening, who has found reason to bring up the Palace of Minos at Knossos.
I want the name of that architect, because whoever it is put a lot of thought. Whoever planned that thing had it. Their head was working correctly, because they apparently knew the area, knew the communities, knew the region. That's impressive. Just hearing it, I can't wait to see it. You've done
the tapered columns, the fascia in between the columns is in the form of little pointed waves. With a sort of sea blue roof, and there's sculptures of sea life in the big plaza as you walk up to it. For instance, in the picture I posted, you can see in the foreground a sculpture of God. I'm not sure what that is. It might have been I don't know, but I knew when I was looking at it. It's just an odd angle. But it's there if anybody wants to see it. So that, but you know, regardless of the fascination of the building itself, what matters here is the idea that you cannot build this with small gummint. See, Alabamians don't want to pay any goddamn taxes, but they will be more than happy to build $50 million. I don't know how much it cost. You know, $20 million hurricane-proof evacuation center, welcome centers on I-10, as long as it's people in Massachusetts and New York and California paying for it.
Yeah.
They don't like welfare unless it's the welfare they get. And rest assured, that's welfare. I mean, I personally think it's a brilliant idea to make it hurricane-proof. I mean, I looked at it and I wondered, what's going to happen when the water... I mean, how long are the restrooms going to work? But there are generators there to try to, you know... It depends on how long the wind blows and the water runs.
Yeah. I'm looking at the picture on Facebook now. That's amazing. That's impressive, Bob.
Isn't it? Isn't it beautiful?
And that sculpture there...
I will ask Agnes to send me, she took a lot more pictures than I did, because we were both just walking around like little hillbillies with our mouths hanging open catching flies.
Yeah.
I looked at it and I said, you know, what a magnificent testament to the determination of we the people to make a more perfect union, even in places where they hate that union.
Well, I was going to ask, at some point, did you lose track of where you were?
No, that's impossible.
No, I mean, in this visitor center, because it is quite impressive, and it would cause me to say, for a moment, forget where I was, because it would not be something you'd ordinarily associate with a public project. I'm assuming it's public. I mean, there may have been private money in it, too. But, you know, it's not just for argument's sake. It's not a type of thing that you would automatically associate with a place like Alabama, where they're not big on federal government or federal spending. And even for a brief moment, I would find myself forgetting where I was for a moment, you know?
Well, you know what? I may be wrong. The thesis of everything I'm saying may be wrong. It was $17.4 million. Steve from Georgistan looked with great determination until he found it. There's a news story from WKRG.com. It was apparently built with BP Horizon disaster money.
Well, it's good to see some good come out of that that debacle.
It opened back on July the 1st when Robert Bentley was still governor because they let him cut the ribbon. 17,000 square feet, Scott.
Damn.
Has state-of-the-art design with sculpted brick of marine wildlife, making the building a real work of art. Also has Wi-Fi throughout, a security station, lighting upgrades, TV monitors showcasing attractions around the state. The great thing about this also, this will withstand a Category 5 hurricane, and so it'll be a center so that people can come if there's any natural disasters in this area. So it serves a dual purpose, adds Bentley. There's even a room off the back, added Bentley, in which I can grope my girlfriend's lovely Christian breastises. State Auditor Jim Ziegler, who is also, of course, I'm sure a Republican, says, I mean, here's a beautiful facility we're going to be able to build without taxpayers' money. That was Bentley. We're going to build it without taxpayers' money. It's going to bring in hundreds of millions of dollars into the state. We're going to have conventions in Alabama. And he's talking about a new state park resort over in Gulf Shores, the last one having been blown away. It was a favorite little haunt of mine. It was kind of a dodgy, seedy little place, but it was a state park. It was cheap. And it got the living hell blown out of it, I think. Might not even have been by Katrina. It might have been by Ivan. But, okay, so maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe this was built with the money from the pollution of the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, but you got to figure that Senator Shelby and the state of Alabama certainly helped guide some of that money, you know, into that project.
I mean, it sits hard by the interstate, so I can't imagine that there's not some federal money in it somewhere.
Oh, yeah, it would have to be if it's that close to a federal highway.
But, yeah, $17.4 million. James asks, is there a way after shit gets real to keep them out so winds will be more comfortable? It's always there, isn't it?
Well, and I'm glad that, we meander sometimes in these conversations, but I'm glad it went the way that it did because it restored my faith that we can get good, practical, useful stuff done when we want to and decide to. So there's some hope in that, and I'm glad of it.
And again, that's just a little miniature chunk of the rant. But it doesn't really change much. That was still government doing it. They just happened to do it with the drop in a bucket that BP paid out as a result of the ruination that they caused in the Gulf of Mexico a few years back.
Yeah, and let's remember, BP didn't, step up without some
they didn't do this out of the kindness of their heart.
To dump that money in everybody's lap.
Right,
in the
who twisted the arms of BP? Not the state of Alabama.
There was more than the arms being twisted, I think.
It was that one in our White House who done that arm twisted.
Imagine that.
But let's not talk about that. I mean, the same way we don't talk about how the foundation stones and all the buildings, all the, you know, like the old state capitol in Alabama were built with slave labor. Let's not talk about that either.
Well, I'm going to go here in a second because I know you probably need to go too, but I am looking forward to that rant and those observations, not only about the trip, because if any two human beings deserved a nice bit of time away, you and Agnes definitely qualify at the top of the list, but also some wise, insightful thoughts about what needs to happen in politics in these areas to make a difference, a positive difference about a future that works for all concerned. And we will all benefit when that conversation and that rant take place. So hats off to you. My hat?
Yeah, it take punkies. I'll try. I don't know how valid it'll be, but it's just stuff that sort of, you can extend your pity to Agnes because she's already heard it, according to the trip computer, for something like 60 hours. I mean, that's 20 days worth of programs, Scott.
Yeah.
That she got subjected to. It was a terrible thing. I'm surprised we're still married, but she keeps telling me she still loves me. So, you know, I'm not going to question.
Yeah. That chatty Bob during the vacation time that broke us up. That's what it was.
We just didn't survive the trip.
Jeez.
Yeah, if it had been in a vehicle that didn't beat the shit out of me, it would have been all the better. But, you know, live and learn. Yeah. I'll spend the extra $20 and get a comfortable automobile next time. But hint
for Chevy Caprice.
Well, hint for anybody over, say, 5'11", the Nissan Sentra is not your friend.
No. I used to have one of the older ones, and I'm 6'4", and it was an interesting squeeze on those long drives.
I mean, the night before we left, I mean, I'm used to getting, you know, we've got a crossover vehicle, so it's a little bit more off the ground. I'm used to getting in that. Agnes was sitting, we were going somewhere, Agnes was sitting in the passenger seat, and I had the driver's side door open, and I guess I just sort of got discombobulated and thought I was getting in our car.
Yeah.
And I proceeded to try to get into that Nissan Sentra, and I drove my left temple squarely into the corner of the top corner of the driver's side door and just reeled away, you know, at full speed, you know, at get in the car speed, not.
Yeah. And see, when you're not used to getting into a clown car, you can expect that kind of stuff to happen. That's why those clowns wear all that heavy makeup.
And just cronked the living shit out of myself and bounced away from it. It was like physics. Equal and opposite reaction, just stomping into the yard. God damn it! Oh, son of a bitch! Oh, I already hate this fucking car! Jesus! And Agnes is sitting in the car. Honey, baby, are you okay? No!
And I'll bet you there was even echoes of the Hanna-Barbera sound effect.
Oh, God, nothing bleeds like a head wound. So, all the photographs from the first couple of days of the vacation have me with this scab on the side of my head and this little circle of purple black eventually fading to yellow green bruising.
Oh God.
And it was worrisome because as we went on down the road, Scott, We got down into South Alabama where humidity is a thing. I mean, it's a thing. And so we'd be toddling along with the air conditioner blasting, and I'd roll down the window, and my glasses would fog up. And the first time that happened, I said, "Honey, I think bashing my head into that door may have been more serious than we thought." And she immediately went, "What?" I said, "I may be having a stroke. That or my glasses are fogged up." And she reaches over and pulls them off my face and goes, "Dumbass, don't ever scare me like that." So, no, you can't lower the seat, Steve, from Georgia, Stan. not unless it's got power seats. It's back, forth, and then tilt, not tilt, to the back of the seat. That's all you get.
Yeah, none of these eight-way power seats.
Nope, sorry. No. And the seat had nothing to do with it anyway. It was where the door was and the whole car. You can't raise or lower the whole car. And so, so from that point forward, every now and then I'd look over and say, "Honey, would you wipe my glasses?" No, actually, I'd say, "Honey, I think I'm having another one of those strokes." And she'd reach over and pull my glasses off, wipe them, put them back on. "You know, you're not going to quit doing that, are you, Bob?" "No, it's too funny."
Well, the slideshow and the travelogue is going to be tremendous. Brush up on your Jackie Vernon impression and get your clicker, and we'll be set. We'll be highly informed and entertained.
Absolutely. And then there's the Bourbon Street story, but I can't do it. It's just too precious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scott, have a good evening. Punky must be napping again.
Yeah, he is. He hears me talk. He only hears one side of it. And he has a very... Punky and I would not do well on a road trip like you and Agnes had. He would be zonked out, you know, after the...
Oh, don't you hate it when you're driving on a long drive and you're sitting there going, "Must not fall asleep. Must not fall asleep."
Yeah.
And your passenger there in the seat next to you is...
Yeah.
Well, I want you to know, beloved Agnes... stayed awake the whole time. And when we got to where we were going, we were beat. But she hung right in there, and we talked and we carried on. And we did. We had a wonderful, wonderful time. And we haven't talked that much alone together in 24 years. Yeah, I guess it was a test. It was either going to wind up in divorce or a recommitment to do another 24 years.
Or additional head wounds that weren't caused by the car.
Well, I think we've decided we want to stick around for another. We're going to renew the contract for another 24 years.
That's great.
And
that is just great.
And I was worried when I showed up when I got that call out of the blue to do Chris Hayes' program in New Orleans. I was like, "Oh, great! I'm going to go in there with a head wound."
I caught that, and it was quite good.
You caught the thing, not the head. Okay, you didn't. You're not saying you caught the head wound. Good.
No, I wouldn't have known that there was a head wound. I was more entranced by the fact that your beard.
Wait a minute. Where'd you go?
Sorry, somebody beeped in. I was entranced by the fact that your goatee was gone.
Well, it's summer.
Yeah.
And I just got sick of it. Because every neck in West Virginia has one of those. It's even some women. And it was just like, let's be clean shaven for a little while. Of course, that just means more shaving. But what the hell? Live a little. But it was fun. And that trip was fun, too. Well, Scott, we will ring off now, but I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Okay, another great conversation. Thank you, Bob.
Yes, indeed. Another one in the books. Thanks, Scott. Bye now.
See ya.
Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. All over the place, but... Don in West Tennistan says, "As a traveler around the South, I find the rest area in Corinth the nicest you can stop at. It's about 50 miles north of Tupelo, on Highway 45, close to the Tennessee line. Free sippy cups of coffee, Coke, Sprite, etc., and 24-hour security. Is that a federal thing or a Mississippi thing?" Yeah, I'm betting there's got to be some federal money in it somewhere. Mississippi can't afford those things by itself. Just like every school has federal money in it in Mississippi and Alabama. But we don't want, we're small government conservatives is what we are. That's what we are. Small government conservatives. Okay. And by the way, there is an unanswered challenge courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. We came in needing only to raise $125, and that's where we stand at 14 minutes left in the program with a $40 challenge about to go the way of all flesh. Brother Deacon Asa says, nah, screw your Alabama Welcome Center. Art Park is where it's at. Well, yes, it is. But it's in Kentucky, not Alabama. Also, the new United States of America is among the top five, both in terms of landmass and population. How in the fuck are you going to run a ginormous country like that with a pissant, teeny-tiny government? Well, but if it's got conservative family values, it can work Merkles. Absolute Merkles, Brother Deacon Asa. Absolutely it can. So, what else? Just to wrap things up for the evening. Just because I get I'm suffering from Nazi exhaustion. How about a little something from up the road here in almost level West by God Trump Genius Stan? There has been a vulgar tradition that has been working its way through college campuses in recent years. I mean, I don't have the cleanest, I use some fun words, but I try not to just be nasty about it. We've seen it, for instance, at the University of Alabama. The bedsheet signs hung out to tell parents, and it's very Trumpian when you get right down to it. Fraternity boys and guys who share tenement houses, student housing, hanging bed sheets out to tell parents the sexual activities that they plan to engage in with their young freshman daughters on move-in day. Well, my alma mater, Harvard on the Mon, West Virginia University, is late to the game. But they're still in it. This is some nasty shit. Here's some guys with beers in their hands. And we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 daughters in our beds right now. 21 to drink, 18 to stick it up our asses. These are bedsheet signs hanging. But lest you think that it's entirely a matter of guys being nasty, here's a couple of WVU women. We burned our couches so we could sit on your face. Daddy's preferred. Freshman specials, free Plan B. Yeah. And they're trying to be inclusive of the moms and dads. Free cookbooks for MILFs. But this was the one that jumped off the screen at me. One, because it's a little bit stupid to put a hashtag on your bedsheet sign. Your bedsheet is not an electronic device, guys. But here we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 white boys living in a student tenement. You can see empty beer and or liquor and or wine bottles behind them. And they have a sign hanging off their front porch that says, "We like our women like our whiskey. Aged and matured. Hashtag MAGA." MAGA, Make America Great Again. That's what makes us, that's the kind of thing that makes us the Trumpiest state in the union. Signs advertising sexual abuse with the Donald Trump hashtag. Again, like I said, it's both genders. Freshman son drop off. Go ahead and drop daddy off too. This is, of course, an institution of higher learning. Here's a young woman sitting on her porch rail. We hope your son's pullout game is strong. I found out about this from my daughter, who asked, Dad, did they have this stuff up at WVU when you were there? And I answered truthfully, no, we did not. Actually, I think I said happily, no. We pursued sex instead of painting our pathetic fantasies about it on bedsheets. To which my daughter replied, burn. But even WVU in-state tuition ain't cheap. And even if you're a WVU alum and you're taking precious daughter up there, or your young son, and even if you're younger than me, and you're part of my, because I wasn't part of the couch-burning generation, which is apparently a thing we started at WVU. We, you know, the university, kids at the university. It can't be encouraging to see that sort of stuff. And I guess all you can really do is hope that you've done a good enough job raising your young'uns that they won't do that stuff. Well, I mean, they're going to have sex, but, you know, what we're talking about here is sort of like an institutionalized, but... Well, it's a promise of sort of rapey behavior. And a little bit of good news as we go out the door. Down in Mississippi, Stan, and I'm sure in other states as well, they've got... Oh, by the way, Robert in Australia says, some of these schools need classes in etiquette. I know that makes me old, but good manners are the oil that makes society work. I know. And at the risk of sounding like a fuddy-duddy, I agree. Not saying you sound like a fuddy-duddy, Robert. I just want to make sure that I'm well, these young kids today, No. We were heathens, too. It's your job at that age to be a heathen. And maybe they're just trying to keep up with, you know, be internet famous for a day or so. Glenn pointing out, I went to WVU from 1979 to 1983 and took courses from a guy named Dr. Henry Rausch in Whitehall. I don't remember any of that crap, But of course, we were too busy pursuing sex. Yeah. You don't understand. Oh, hell, 1979 to 1983. You remember the stadium loop. You remember the Sunnyside slide. You left, Glenn, as I was arriving. If you graduated in May of... if you graduated in May of 1983, well, I arrived in August of 1983. Glenn says, I paid $180 per semester in-state tuition. Yeah, gone are the days. I bet Glenn and I could get on the phone, on a call here, and amaze you all with our feats of memory, describing the various and sundry dives that were to be found in Morgantown. Sunnyside, by the way, Glenn, is gone. Another college campus, though, the home of the University of Mississippi, otherwise known as Ole Miss, Oxpatch, Mississippi, Oxford. Mississippi has a gun sales tax holiday in which, during a set period of time, if you buy yourself a brand new Freedom Protector, you don't pay any sales tax for it. And if you're talking about a $1,000 Freedom Protecting deer rifle, well, that can be a real savings. But responding to that, an institution in Oxford, Mississippi called Square Books has announced its own sales tax holiday promotion. They're having a tax-free book holiday. I know, imagine that, a real brick-and-mortar bookstore still in existence. So since the legislature didn't see fit to, it's Mississippi, why would they want to have a tax holiday on books? I mean, guns, that makes sense. So Square Books of Oxford is going to eat 7% of its sales price. Everything will be discounted 7% on their official sales tax book holiday. This promotion, they wrote, according to the Clarion Ledger, celebrates the great traditions of free expression and free press in our nation and the rich tradition of Mississippi's literature. It occurs on the same weekend that the state legislature grants a sales tax holiday to anyone in Mississippi purchasing guns, a Second Amendment tax holiday initiated in Governor Phil Bryant's first term. We encourage the Mississippi legislature to one day initiate a similar holiday for the sale of in celebration of the vital importance of the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. So they still have to collect the 7%, and they still have to turn it into the state government to support things, so that the state government can have things like sales tax holidays on guns. But you know, they mentioned the rich literary tradition of Mississippi. It's real. Eudora Welty and William Faulkner alone could constitute it, but there's ever so much more. So good on them. A little something nice to end the evening. Time to get out of here. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you. To Midweek Utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, and I promise you there was not a raise and lower the seat thing in that Sentra. I looked. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to everybody who contributes to keep this program going. Looks like we'll have a little fundraising hole tomorrow. But we'll deal with it. Thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaging in the program. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Coal River Mountain Watch on Twitter, or on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.